trigger man is Ellis. Catch and shoot, it's George. Rainbow three doesn't go. Biombo with the board. It's over. The Raptors survive. Toronto wins its first playoff series since 2001.
They're chanting, "We want Cleveland," as Nogueira throws it down. Toronto today advancing to the franchise's first ever Eastern Conference Final. It's official now. It's the greatest season in Raptors history.
We expect you and DeMar to drive this team, but in the absence of Jonas Valanciunas, what effect does Bismack Biyombo have on your ability to win?
I mean, Biz, he's been like that all season. You know, JV went down early with a broken hand, and Biz did an unbelievable job. And even now, he stayed ready, stayed committed to the process. Tonight, did an unbelievable job, 16, 17. I don't know how many blocks, but it's a team effort. You know, one man go down, it's next man up.
You committed to an organization for the long term, and for the first time you go to a conference finals. What went into getting you here?
Hard work, dedication, sticking with the process, and just having fun with it. You know, it's not going to last forever, so have fun with this, smile, enjoy it, and enjoy the fans and the game of basketball.
It is Sportsfeld story time. We are looking back to the 2016 Toronto Raptors playoff run. We left off in episode one, getting you through the regular season. The Raptors with a 12-man deep rotation all the way from Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, and DeMarre Carroll, all the way down to 22-year-old rookie Norm Powell. A very deep team, a very big bench-oriented team a year before Bench Mob, but Lowry and Bench becoming a very important piece of the puzzle. And the Raptors, a 56-win team, start things off against the number 7 seed, the Indiana Pacers. And this is one where I look back at it now. At the time, I was very confident because we're talking about a 2 seed, a 56-win team against the Pacers, who were, not that good. They were the 7 seed, so how good could they possibly be? And yet, when I look at the roster of the Indiana Pacers, the 45-37 Indiana Pacers, I go Paul George, George Hill, Monte Ellis, Miles Turner, Ion Mahimi, Solomon Hill, Rodney Stuckey, CJ Miles, Ty Lawson. I'm not convinced that's not a better team than the Raptors had.
This was sort of like a big test of Raptor fan fundamentalism, for lack of a better term. We're like, we always had to be like, we don't have a superstar, but that's okay. Like, we're so deep and well put together. But then, like, you know, one game in, Paul George just comes and fucking kicks our ass. And it's like, oh, maybe it is a bad thing.
I think this season was sort of a coming out party for Paul George, most definitely. Really taking off as a guy who could feasibly be a number one. As you said, he had 33 points in game one, 4 steals. And when I look at the Raptors-Pacers matchup, something that's different in this than is different against the Heat is in Paul George and in George Hill, you have guys that you can put up against Lowry and DeRozan to really, really, really slow them down. And they were slowed down in this series.
Yeah, Lowry in game one, Lowry shot 14% from three, 23% from the field. He went 3 of 13 from the field for 11 points. DeMar went 5 of 19, 0 for 3 from 3, 14 points. You know, JV was the only guy. Again, this is exactly what we're talking about. JV played 21 minutes, but had 12 and 11.
No, 12 and 19. He had 11
12 and 19,
rebounds.
Sorry, yes. 12 and 19 in 21 minutes.
Crazy.
And just like, This was as I said in the first episode, this was such an emotionally draining playoff run because it was just so frustrating.
Yes, absolutely. And Kyle was so good this year, and you know, we as Raptors fans, you've had to defend Kyle Lowry against people like even me back in the day. You've had to defend Kyle against people who don't see the offensive numbers or who only see the offensive numbers, and for him to be an all-star this year and to have averaged more than 20 points a game and to have been so good, it was like, finally, he's going to put this behind him. And then they came out, and it just could not have been a worse possible start.
I know the Raptors have the game one curse, and it's a thing that existed to the point of the title run. But like, I have a memory of, I guess it would have been the 2007 playoffs, I guess. I was on a train because I was checking out Concordia, where I would end up going to school. And it was game one against the Nets. I remember I was on the train, and like, you couldn't like stream games really at that point. So I was sort of refreshing the box score and just slowly watching that score get more and more out of hand and the Raptors being further and further away. That feeling of game ones has never gone away. And it's just like, I don't know. This series was so back and forth for every game. Like, no game was no game in this Pacers series was closer than game seven was decided by 5 points. And that was the closest game in the series. Everything else was 9+.
Yeah. And they traded wins. There was never anybody that was up by more than one game. It was very back and forth.
Oh, sorry. Game five, which I do want to talk about because it's arguably, until last year, probably the craziest playoff game in Raptors history. That was decided by 3 points as well.
Yeah, we can sort of speed through the game. Game two, they sort of bounce back. JV again, 23-15. A good Kyle game where he goes 18-7-9. Still hasn't hit a. He still can't hit a three. He goes 0-for-5 from three. He goes 4-of-13 from the field. DeMar, even worse, 5-of-18, 27% from the field, only 10 points. So through two games, Raptors are 1-1, and DeRozan has been god-awful, and Lowry has been pretty bad.
Yeah, and that was kind of this whole playoffs.
Yeah.
Lowry had his moments. DeRozan, I feel like, had one or two moments, but even up until the Cavs series, like, when we get to the games, like, we're talking Kyle. We're not talking DeMar.
Yeah, and we're talking Valanciunas. This is like,
yeah.
You want to talk about the birth of JV Hive? You can go back and look at this and even say, if he doesn't get hurt in this playoff run, who knows what happens?
For sure.
Yeah.
Game three a little better for everybody. Kyle 21, DeMar 21, Damari Carroll 17, JV another 14 rebounds.
What is going on that they can't stop Jonas Valanciunas?
None of these, because the Pacers had nobody.
Yeah, Ion Mahimi,
like
LaVoy
Ion
Allen.
Mahimi was, and then like it was Hassan Whiteside with the Heat. Like these teams didn't have guys that could match his size.
Yes, and they weren't playing Miles Turner.
No.
It's funny that the Pacers, well, they played 31 minutes in this game, but the Pacers almost seem ahead of their time a little bit with sort of this lineup that you think would probably be a little bit better than it ends up being.
Yeah, I think so. And also, like, having a guy, again, in 2016, having a guy like Paul George is worth its weight in gold.
Yes, absolutely. Raptors take game three, 101-85. Things sailing along pretty smoothly until game four. The Pacers take this one by 17. As you said, just blowouts back to back to back to back to back. Kyle and DeMar again shooting low. Kyle 4-of-12, DeMar 4-of-15. 8 points for DeMar, only 12 for Kyle.
JV again, 6-of-7. Also only 27 minutes. But yeah, this series is, until game five, this series was just like, who wants it? Who would like to win this series?
No kidding. And then game five, as you mentioned, game five, one of the early crazier games in Raptors playoff history, and this was, you know, Kyle and DeMar had really stomped out some hopes, but had made people a little sad with the lack of production. And then in this game, it looks like it's all pretty much over. The Raps, they go down fairly sizable. They enter the third down quite a bit, and
yeah, they're going into the fourth quarter. They were down 14, I think.
Crazy. And then a 25-9 fourth quarter. The Raptors' defense turns it up. Is this the one that gets punctuated by the Norm Powell dunk?
The dunk where he should have used two hands that I'm still mad about to this day. That, if you remember correctly, to tie the game, he's running down the court, and there's no one around him, and he dunks with one hand. He does like a Superman dunk, and you can see the ball is like slipping out of his hand, but he kept enough control of it to dunk with one hand.
Norman Powell, the rookie with the steal. We are tied! 92-92! Take it to the rim, Norman Powell!
And then the ending of this game was, I believe it was Solomon Hill hits the three at the buzzer to tie the game, but didn't get it off in time. And so they would review it, and it would turn out that it was no good. This was also kind of the Norm Powell coming out game.
Yes, he played 28 minutes in this game, which Dwayne Casey not wont to do. Not really a guy that he was a big veterans guy. I mean, you saw how much he would play Luis Scola until the playoffs. Scola does not play a bunch of these playoff games, which is sort of wild. You mentioned in the first episode how quickly he tended to not fall off the mat, but how quickly the shine came off, and he went from every game starter to a guy who doesn't even play in the playoff run.
Yeah, I think his legs just caught up to him.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was when I was like, oh, Blake was right. Norm Powell might be good. An early Blake was right game. Not the last.
That would become define an era with the Blake is right as a way of life. And then, you know, it cannot be said enough times, if you were a Raptors fan in this era, that the worst thing you could do is let any sort of confidence carry over.
I do remember in that game, we were still in rehearsals for Bad Jews for this, and it was a Sunday afternoon game, I think, or a Sunday evening game, and I remember checking my phone about to go back into the theater to rehearse, and seeing that they were down like whatever 14 or something. I'd be like, well, that's over. And then on my next break, checking again, and they were winning. And just being like, what happened? Very confusing.
And then, you know, as we said, in this era, any sort of positivity immediately right back to the problems. DeMar has 8 points in the next game. Kyle only has 10. I am so happy that this team sorts it out, because they were in danger of never shaking off this playoff run from their reputations.
They really felt cursed.
Yeah.
Like it truly felt like there was something happening preventing the Raptors from winning. And it might have been they didn't have a good enough team.
Game 7, Raptors at home. I was pretty sure they were going to lose this game. May 1st, 2016.
Hell yeah.
No reason to believe they would win. But they get DeMar takes 32 shots to score 30 points. Listen, whatever it takes.
And like they scraped by on this one.
Another 10 and 15 from Jonas. 11 and 9 from Kyle, who shot 35%. 89-85. The Raptors get a fucking break and win a playoff series. This felt like they had gotten away with a steal, and then I thought they were going to lose pretty bad to the Heat after this.
It was so weird, because it felt like they got away with a steal, but also felt like they were supposed to win because they were the 2 seed. And it was like frustrating that they were struggling so much. But like, you're right, in retrospect, it does kind of feel like they got away with one.
Your series stats: Kyle, 14 points a game on 31% shooting, 16% from three. Really ugly. DeMar, just under 18 points, propped up by the couple 30-points games. But he was also in single digits as much as he was in the 30s. Also 32% shooting and 16% from three. JV averaged 13.5 and 12. Corey Joseph averaged 10.5. And then Norm Powell, as you said, a breakout series. He played 18 minutes a game and was like the best offensive wing, shooting just about 43.5%. He also started game one. So interesting wrinkles there in Norm over the course of the year, really earning trust to the point that he, you could say, helped swing the series.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's a stretch. His energy, and he was the kind of, like, he was that sort of cutting to the lane wing that the Raptors so sorely needed.
Push forward round two was against the 3-seeded Heat. Their lineup was as follows. They had Dwayne Wade, Goran Dragic, Joe Johnson, Lou Alding, Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow, Josh McRoberts, Hassan Whiteside, Udonis Haslam, of course, Gerald Green, and just a pinch of late career Amari Stoudemire in their lineup.
Oh, yeah. I forgot Amari. Oh, yeah. And Amari was, like, unplayable.
He was
so bad.
He is barely on the floor in this rotation. But, of course, the Raptors lose game one. No questions.
But game one was punctuated by the Kyle Lowry half-court buzzer beater to send it to overtime.
It's a three-point game. Raptors need a three here to tie it and send it into overtime.
Do they give the foul? I would.
Lowry scoops it up. Lowry lets it fly.
I remember I was saying last week how I watched a lot of these games, catching the end of them in a bar by myself in Montreal, and just sitting there, assuming the game was over. They lost another game one. They're going to lose the Heat. People had filed out of the, had left the bar already. And then Lowry puts up this half court heave that goes in, and it almost felt like it didn't happen. And like, I'm pretty sure if you look at the film of the shot, they're like, the crowd has left the ACC. And then everyone's like, oh, shit, we have overtime now.
That three, his only three-point make of the game, he had 7 points. Another huge JV game. He goes 24-14 in this one, which is crazy.
Yeah, Whiteside just could not handle him. And played 41 minutes, which is very unlike JV as well.
Hassan Whiteside is a bum.
Yes, agreed.
Norm Powell starts this game as well and only gets 2 points in 21 minutes. He was really, like, he's... still has a reputation as a streaky guy, but he was really, really hot and cold as a rookie.
He really was.
You also get 19 from Terrence Ross, who really is quietly a really important part of that bench we talked about. He really shows up in a lot of these games.
Well, I mean, he was the only guy really who, like, other than occasionally Patrick Patterson, he's the only guy who consistently gave you, like, consistent three-point shooting. Man, arguably on this entire roster.
Going back, I really can't believe how good JV is throughout this playoff run.
Until he gets hurt, it's pretty insane.
Raptors are game two kings. They get crushed in game one, but they always come back.
Another overtime game. I'd forgotten this one went to overtime.
This was a great series. This was honestly, until they take the next steps. I remember coming out of this being like, that was the best Raptor series I've ever seen.
It was really fun.
Starting to come around a little bit for Kyle. 7 of 22, 18 points. DeMar, 9 of 24 for 20 points. DeMarre Carroll leads all scorers in the Raptors with 21. This was a big... everybody needed to chip in. Again, Norm only 2. But another overtime game. Crazy to think in 2020 they played in overtime and neither team broke 100 points.
Truly. And, like, it's kind of, you know, we keep saying, like, oh, it's coming around for Kyle. It's coming around for DeMar. That's probably why we never won anything.
Yeah.
Like, us just having to say, oh, it's coming around. It's coming around. Rather than, like, you watch a team that wins a title and it's like, oh, Kawhi just kicked everyone's ass.
Yes. 100%. The Raptors do put together back-to-back wins because Kyle Lowry has 33 points in game three. Look at that. Good Kyle. I think I was guilty of this as well, but, you know, the impressions made in this playoff run really stuck. And not just this one, but the one before and the ones that would come after really do stick with him as his reputation to some people to this day.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, even I feel like he's starting to get out of it, but even last year at the title run, it was like, can Kawhi win a title with Kyle Lowry as his point guard, which is so stupid. And yeah. Clearly, yes. But of course it stuck with them. This game also notable for when JV got hurt.
Yes.
Midway through the game. When he got hurt in 22 minutes, he had 16 and 12. And I remember this was like a very typical Raptors feeling of like, they won game three, But without JV, they're fucked.
Yes, but that's probably it. Is probably how it would feel, because you weren't allowed to have good things if you were a Raptors fan.
No, but what we didn't know at the time was JV's injury would spawn maybe the greatest 2-week run in Raptors history.
Yes,
of Bismack Biyombo.
He moves into the starting lineup and immediately puts up 13-13. In a loss in game four. We go up, we go back down. Kyle and DeMar combine for 19 points on 6 of 28 shooting. It was so hard to watch Kyle and DeMar struggle like this. It really was.
And it was clockwork, too.
Yes.
You knew it was going to happen.
Every time that went up, they would come back down. But they did bounce back. They do bounce back.
They do. Game five, DeMar goes for 34. Kyle goes for 25. Bismack puts up 10. Has there ever been a Toronto athlete who is still so beloved by being good for like 6 days?
He showed up for the playoff run last year and got standing ovation.
That's what I mean. And good for him. He parlayed this into like a $70 million contract. So I'm glad we didn't give it to him, but like good for Biz. But like, it's still wild to me that he is so popular in Toronto. And literally was good for, I'm like, 10 games.
Low-key part of this run, and I think this is something that people who have always been pro-Kyle will point out, like always racking up rebounds and steals and stuff as well. In this game, 10 rebounds, 6 assists. That's like, he's a point guard playing against Goran Dragic and Dwayne Wade. That is not easy to do.
I feel like Toronto Raptor fans, and like I know for me certainly, I think as the team has gotten better over the last few years, the fans have also gotten smarter about that kind of stuff. Whereas like I do think back then it was very much like, look at the scores and like look how many points they scored. But now I think a lot of Raptors fans, and I think we've had to because we spend all our time defending Kyle Lowry, but like now we're always like, look at his assists and rebound totals.
These next two games, game 6 and game 7, is when I had hoped that the Kyle Lowry talk would stop. He puts up 36 in game 6 in a loss, which is so it goes. DeMar has 23 and nobody else even gets double figures. Because they lose by 12. But game 7, until last year, until Kawhi, and basically until Kyle's game 6 against the Warriors even, this was my favorite Raptors performance, is Kyle Lowry in Game 7 against the Heat.
I remember I believe this was a Sunday afternoon game, so I'm pretty sure I watched it between shows. It's like we had a matinee and we had a night show, and it just happened to work out that like I was able to fit the game in between of the timing. And I remember being so nervous, sitting in the dressing room, watching this game on my computer, and just like it within like by halftime, you're like, okay, this is done. Like they weren't up by that much and it was still tight, but for all of the doubt that Raptors fans have ingrained in their souls, I never thought they were losing this one.
This is Kyle Lowry's crowning performance, 35, 9 assists, 7 boards and 4 steals. And not just that, Bismack Biyombo, by the way, 17-16, of course.
was this the game where Bismack has the block on the one end and he chases it down and dunks on the other end and everyone went nuts?
Bismack fucking Biyombo. I can't believe it.
But like people went nuts. Yeah, it was game 5 was the one where he blocks Wade on one end, then runs the floor and dunks on the other end, and the ACC just exploded.
Joseph picked up his first foul. DeRozan with Lowry, Biz, Patterson, and Carroll. DeMar, wide open look, doesn't go. Bismack with the thunderous slam. How about big business? 8 points, 4 rebounds. Wade to the rim, denied. In the finger wag. The other way. To Biz. Yes! You just saw that. Getting it done at both ends.
The big part of it here, and to your point, of the Raptors really holding this off is they go into the half up six. They go into the fourth up four, and they pull off a 30-11 fourth quarter to close this out. It was so uncharacteristic as to the reputation they had earned to that point that they had now gone through two game sevens. They had outlasted two teams that they gave too many opportunities to, and they had finally gotten themselves a conference finals matchup.
Yeah, and it was also, it very much felt like it was a very much happy to be there conference finals too.
Yes,
which I mean in a, as a positive.
Yeah,
like the beating, getting through the first two rounds, the conference finals to play LeBron and the Cavs was kind of like, you know what? What it was exactly what we talked about last year before the finals until the finals started. It was like, oh, we're actually going to win the finals.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So the Raptors have vanquished the 7-seed Pacers and the 3-seed Heat. It took 14 games, but they did it. The only problem is waiting for them on the other side is the 8-0 number 1 seed LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. There is reason for hope, and it wasn't all bad. We will get into that in the next episode of Sportsfeld Storytime.